As you probably all know, we were hoping that Ed and Keiko will be here, and hoping they're still well.
Yeah, maybe. Sure. Maybe something came up.
Yeah. But I asked you before the screening about how you came across the subject matter. Can you back up a little bit more and tell us about your background and what you're making and
sure.
just coming to Utah?
Yeah, so I've been making movies for about 5 or 6 years, maybe a little bit longer. I started off with a movie about the Utah poet Alex Caldiero, called The Sinosopher, and I did it as a student. Yeah, so I did that as a student at UVU. That was my undergraduate thesis. I've just been making movies since.
Uh-huh.
Just mostly shorts, and I'm working on a feature now, but...
Documentary?
Yeah.
Cool.
Working on a feature right now about the battle over same-sex marriage in Utah.
Oh, okay.
So we're following the... We've been following, pretty much since December, we've been following the plaintiffs and Peggy Tomsic, the lawyer, and trying to get in on with the Attorney General, but no luck so far.
What kind of time frame do you anticipate for something like that? At what point will
the
arc of the story be over?
We'll know in the fall if it's going to the Supreme Court, then it's almost like we're starting all over again.
Yeah.
We'll just like start shooting, like that's the beginning. We've already amassed hundreds of hours of footage, so if it doesn't go to the Supreme Court, our plan is to constrain it and just turn it into like a half-hour story for TV.
All right.
So cool. Instead of trying to do something
60 or 90 minutes.
Sprawling, yeah. That, I feel like it's a little bit of a smaller story if it doesn't go to the Supreme Court.
Right. So let's talk about this one. When did you finish and release this? How was the release? This film has won a lot of awards and a lot of accolades. And is this them here?
Oh, yeah.
There they are. Cool. Come on up.
I will scoot down. Scoot.
Yeah.
Just in time. We just finished the movie. Already? And just started the Q&A.
Oh, really?
You're good?
I got the time mixed up.
No, you're perfectly on time.
No, why don't you sit in the middle? Is that mic working there? Is the mic working?
Yes.
That might be helpful to use.
Sorry, I'll try to speak up too.
Let's check that.
Thanks.
I'll check the mic. Here's the family, the Hayward family. Thank you guys for coming. Why don't you go ahead and tell us about that, about how the film's been received and what kind of response
sure.
you've gotten.
So, is this working?
No.
Okay, I'll speak up for the time being. The movie has been received really well. We published it in December, and at the beginning,
try that.
Hello. Okay, good. At the beginning, we had pretty decent views online. It was released online, and we won the Artistic Vision Award at Big Sky Film Festival in Montana, and then we won the Utah Short Film of the Year. And then shortly after that, the film got picked up by Upworthy online, and since then, it's just been pretty crazy. Today, we think that we might reach 1 million views, so it's been great. Yeah,
literally today, you might.
Yeah, when I left, I've been a little bit addicted to looking at the views, but today when I left, we were at 996,000 views. So
that's okay.
Yeah, if you look long enough, the stats go up.
Richard Bushman said the same thing about his Amazon buys and points on Redstone Rolling. Like was. Looked at it at 2 a.m. You had to get up.
Yeah.
So let's pass it down the line. How has this film influenced you guys?
For me, it's been kind of crazy. As soon as Upworthy posted it, just people started sending in messages and emails and friend requests on Facebook, and there's just like this huge outpouring of just love and support, which has been amazing. And I've had friends that like I haven't talked to in ages say, you know, oh my goodness, I was on PeopleMagazine.com and there was your video. So so it's just been really overwhelming, but in a really good way. And
has there been the opposite pushback or condemnation or?
You know, I haven't noticed any, which is what's strange. Usually there's a little bit of something, but no, it's been really great.
Keiko and Ed, do you have any thoughts about that? Just how the film has influenced your own?
Well, I have been getting contacted by a lot of parents who have kids that are struggling with gender identity disorder, dysphoria, or other similar things. And some of them contacted me because Torben put them in touch with me. Others, because other leaders like Ty Mansfield and other people that know me and that are in the media have been contacted and have put it to. And to me, that's really great because that's what I really wanted, was to be able to reach out and see if I can help people. So I'm really excited about how the film has taken off. It's exceeded our expectations by far.
Yeah.
And it's really exciting.
We're gonna have you say something at some point. What about the production process for you three? We heard it wasn't a very long shoot, but just articulating your position and your beliefs and just where you were at that point. How did that affect you? How did that change your own self-perspective, I guess is what I'm trying to ask.
It's been really interesting. So the whole process kind of happened really quickly because it was right before I was about to leave for Thailand, and so we didn't have a lot of time. And so we kind of just, you know, we were just filming and interviewing and just all these questions coming at us. And I was surprised at how easily I think the whole process went, probably thanks to Torben just being very good at what he does. But it's, I think the fact that I was able to sort of just go with it and it was able to not be rehearsed at all, you know, just sort of in a couple days it all happened. So that sort of surprised me that we were able to go through that, and it kind of sort of strengthens my like confidence in my ability to articulate what I'm experiencing, what I'm feeling, and so it was a good experience for me to go through.
Was it similar for you too?
I think those things, I would agree with that as well, and it's been great working with Torben. I think we've become really good friends. When we first met Torben and we first started doing the documentary, I frankly was really nervous about it because this can be a controversial issue. It's not to me, but to a lot of people, it's a very controversial issue. And I didn't know Torben at the time, and I was really nervous because I thought, okay, I mean, a lot of times, and I have had a few comments where people have said, "Well, good for you, Ed," and I sure hope that those church leaders will get a clue and stuff like that, which is not at all how I feel. And I was a little bit nervous as to how things would be presented. And I am so happy that Torben was the one that took charge, because like Eddie said, not only is he and his team have excellent skills, but they were also so fair about it. They didn't have any kind of hidden agenda. And they presented the story, just these are the facts, this is the way it is, and let people interpret it. And I was really happy about that. And I'm really glad that it was Torben that did the documentary and not somebody else.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm surprised at how quickly you gave access and you said you'd do it. Were you worried?
I was a little bit nervous, and I'm a very active member of the church, and I worked closely with my state president, over the years, and I let him know that I was going to do this, and he was really nervous. He said, "Ed, you don't know what's going to happen, and this can
be very embarrassing."
He didn't know Torben, but by that time, I had met Torben and was comfortable enough that I told him, I said, "That's not going to be an issue," and instead, this has turned out to be what I really want. Is I want through this process to be building bridges, and in my opinion, the leaders of the church, they want to understand these things. They just haven't had an opportunity to. And they're entitled to revelation, but the revelation has to be based on something, and they need some understanding. And so my hope is that because of the work that Torben has done, and because of the way Eddie has presented this in a very open and frank and sharing way, not condemning anyone, that the leaders of the church will be able to see that, and it will help them, and it will make and may not happen overnight, but it'll make the church a more comfortable place for people that are not typical in their experiences and their situation, to feel more comfortable coming to church. That's what I hope and pray is going to come out of it.
Do you think that, any of the four of you, do you think that transgender issues are different in that way from gay and lesbian issues? Or is it largely the same?
I'll say something, then I'll let Eddie have the mic, because she's saying, oh, great, Dad's got the mic. But I think that there are definitely differences, but there are also some similarities. And when Eddie first came out, and if you have followed her story, then you know she first came out and told us that she was gay, and so we got very involved in the gay community of the LDS Church, and then after that, and so kind of we've been exposed to both, and I see a lot of similarities as far as the difficulties in going to church and feeling comfortable there, the misunderstandings that church leaders has as to exactly what your situation is, and the problems of even just watching conference on TV and hearing things said on conference that hurt. And so I think there are some definite and very significant similarities.
Yeah. I think that there are differences, and there are even differences just based on the individual. Yeah. Even if we're both trans, our experience, you know, just based on what we've, where we live, our community, our families, that all changes, but there's enough similarities that I think that, you know, our video can help not even, like, not just people in the LGBT community, but also, you know, women who are single and not married,
anyone who feels
families
ostracized,
families who don't have children, you know, any individual or people that don't fit that cookie cutter mold becomes very, very awkward and difficult, and people don't even understand how to relate to them all of a sudden in that community, because, you know, everyone sits down and says, so, oh, how many kids do you have? And you're like, oh, well, I'm trans, and so I don't have kids. I can't give birth. You know, and it can be really awkward, not just for trans people, but for, you know, single women who aren't married or women who can't have kids. So I think it opens up a lot of eyes to something that's been, you know, been in the shadows.
Mm-hmm. Torben, do you have any thoughts about that, or about your ultimate goal for the film, or for the dialogue?
I probably have more ideas about the latter. The former is a little bit too complicated for me to get into, but in terms of the latter, I think what my hope was with the film was to do service to the story. I tell a lot of different types of stories. I've been very nomadic. I kind of each story I tell is very different than the last. And the main thing is trying to have integrity in the way that the story is told by trying to open myself up to listening to the material. And by listening, I mean like a deep listening, where I try to have empathy and really listen to what's going on and understand what the pain is around the story, and then do service to it. I think when you do that, then film can be a really powerful catalyst for empathy, and the empathy alone is what really sparks the dialogue, is doing justice to a story that already embodies those tensions. I had some pushback in an interview I did a few months ago, and they asked me if I had kind of pulled back on the church, like if I had intentionally not brought it more.
If there were punches you could have thrown that you didn't.
Yeah, and I said, and my response to them was that, one, I think to me it's a matter of recognizing what already exists in the material, and then trusting in people to make those connections. And so presenting those juxtapositions, to me the juxtaposition between the nuance of their story with the policy of the current policies of the church, mm-hmm. is stark enough to serve as a critique, or to at least spark dialogue. And so I didn't really feel like any more was necessary than that. I'm really interested. I think I think a lot of times as a, I'm slowly learning that in documentary, what makes something interesting was interesting before you got there. It already has, it's already charged with that power, and it's like their story was already what it was, and it was my duty then in that is to simply try to do my best to translate it into the medium that I know.
Yeah.
And so I say, okay, like this story is already powerful. These emotions are real. They're not contrived. So to the extent that they're not, what can I do to amplify them and to make sure that I don't obscure what's there? You know, I think people, a lot of times when they're making movies, I think they make the error of just not recognizing what already exists and then piling on top of it. And so then it just feels contrived because they're not recognizing what already is there.
The postscript on the film says that you're dealing with church leaders. I'm sure people would like to know what's happened since the surgery.
So after surgery, you do have to sit down and talk with your church leaders, and we did that. Right now, actually, because after surgery, you know, I did sit down, and they said things to me that were very obvious, like you can't hold the priesthood, which, good, You know, I didn't want to become a woman but then keep the priesthood. Like, I was very aware of what becoming a woman means. So there were no real issues there. The issue that I'm actually dealing with now is that I live with my boyfriend and we're not married. So that is what we are currently dealing with. But it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that I had surgery.
That's a separate issue.
Which is kind of, it surprised me. I think I was living with my boyfriend not thinking about that because it seemed so small in comparison to, you know, preparing to have the surgery. And so after the surgery, I thought, oh, that's right. I have other issues that I have to deal with as well. So.
Can I make a comment about that, too?
Not about you living with your boyfriend. I'll say
anything like that. And I think I would like to hear from you as well.
So, you know, I have to tell you that The church handbook doesn't give a lot of guidance to the church leaders on how to handle these things. And so you're going to find that not every stake or every bishop is going to handle things the same way. They're left up to try and figure this out. And because of that, and because of the variation in experience that different church leaders have, it pretty much runs the gamut as far as what kind of responses you're going to get. We have really good stake president and bishop that I think have had experiences that have helped them to understand this maybe a little bit better than most people have. And yeah, just like Eddie said, their concern was that she get married to this young man, which her father is also in favor of, and not that she
didn't know
the operation. I just want to slip that in there. But it was not that she had the operation. As a matter of fact, my bishop came to me and we were talking about it, and he said, you know, he said, I can't tell you a lot what's going on because they keep this obviously very confidential. But he said, I do want you to know that the stake president seems more concerned with that than with the transgender issue. That doesn't seem to be an issue. And the bishop felt that way too, and he was excited about it. He didn't realize that the stake president felt exactly the same way. But again, you're going to find that is not the case with every stake president and every bishop.
You've indicated they've had a long dialogue with you. Have they seen the film? Do you think that this long dialogue has helped?
As soon as the film came out, I sent a link to all of them to look at. So yeah, they have seen the film, and I think it played a big role in helping them to understand.
Yeah. Go back to open up for questions. Go ahead.
Another question. First of all, congratulations on how beautifully as a family you handled this. I think that's the modeling of that. You know, I've been involved in issues relating to LGBT issues for about 40 years, and it is more complicated, and there are levels of difficulty associated with it simply because the population is much smaller and people have a much harder time understanding it. Because you can go from male to female, female to male, and a lot of people simply can't kind of take that in. But I was really interested in the question of you having been ordained to the priesthood, right?
Yes.
And so what, did they suspend that? Did they unordain you? how is it that having been ordained to the priesthood, you no longer have it, or is it simply held in abeyance?
Well, I feel like, I mean, there was no sort of like formal, like, you know,
unlaying
on but to be honest, even when I was ordained, it didn't feel right. And so, in my mind, I never really had the priesthood. I know that I went through a lot of the motions of it, but I never felt like that was something that I was really entitled to, and I didn't necessarily want it. I just kind of did it because that was expected of a 12-year-old,
like
a 14-year-old.
Yeah. My question is a kind of technical question in a way, but it's a theological question, and it has kind of moral implications. You were ordained. You haven't been unordained. Mm-hmm. Technically, you hold the priesthood whether you feel you want it or not. So it seems to me it presents a very interesting conundrum, especially if there are other people who fit into that category of, say, a girl who then becomes, she trends the other way and she becomes ordained. So I think your father's right. We're in territory that no one anticipated in 1831 yeah. or even in 1931 or even in 2013 probably. So it just represents a very interesting challenge to the contemporary church is how to deal with a variety of these issues. And it faces you in a way because if you choose to be active, then it has all of these other implications in terms of what does that mean.
Well, I think that in the belief system, if you're not worthy of the priesthood or any other covenant or that sort of leaves. It's only with you for as long as you are trying to be worthy of it. And since I feel like I never was worthy or I never qualified to have it, there was no need for me to be technically and officially unordained. It just happened. I can tell. Don't worry.
So, I mean, this is an interesting question, but I think it's a question more that addresses a bigger issue than just Eddie. And I think we can just speak to her situation, and I think she's done that. As far as she's concerned, she doesn't hold the priesthood. And even when she was ordained to the priesthood, she already knew that she was a woman. And so because of that, it was something that she kind of felt like she had to do it, but she didn't feel comfortable with it. There may be other members that don't feel that way, that have transitioned, that were ordained to the priesthood. Now they're female, but they still feel like they hold the priesthood, but we can't really speak to that. And as to what the church's position on that, we're not qualified to speak for that
right.
either.
So and it's probably in flux.
You probably want us to speculate a little bit. That's the best we can do.
I don't want to speculate. I want us to all kind of understand we're in
where we are.
New moral okay. territory. Mm. I teach ethics, and so I'm very interested in the ethical issues.
It's a very complicated issue that you just brought up.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a couple minutes left. We probably can't cover it. Go ahead.
So, yeah, my contribution to the same kind of moral dilemma, but a little bit different, because it really struck me in the film. You said that in the resurrection, you know, if she was resurrected as a boy, that would, you know, be something that you wouldn't want. And, you know, and I've thought about that quite frequently, too, of what happens in the resurrection as an active Latter-day Saint, you know. And, you know, I wouldn't want my gay friends to be any different than they are, you know, in the resurrection. So has any church leader spoken to you about that, or do you see maybe a change coming up in our doctrine over these kinds of issues?
I mean, I will tell you some of the information I was given by my state president. But again, I'm not speaking for the church. I'm just telling you my own experience. But I talked a lot to my state president about just trying to understand what was going on and trying to find out what revelation that the brethren had received that I didn't have. And I read everything I could, and at the time I was in a bishopric, so I had access to the handbook, and I pored over that. I pretty much memorized, but it's only like a paragraph. And then there were a few other things that kind of touched on it, but they weren't specific to transgender issues. And then I went to the stake president, and I talked to him about the proclamation of the up to the world that says that gender is an eternal characteristic. And I said, what does that mean? Does that mean, you know, what everyone else keeps telling me that it means, but it doesn't exactly say that. So my stake president went to the brethren and asked him about it. And then he came back to me, and he said, you're not going to be happy with my answer. And I thought, okay, because I was happy to get an answer, so I wasn't sure. And he said, the brethren told me to tell you that you have all of the revelation that they have and that there isn't any more. And they said, we're not holding anything back. We've prayed about it and asked, and the Lord has said, this is all you have right now. And so
if they said that, then that's pretty amazing.
It is. Maybe that means there's going to be more revelation coming. Yeah. I don't know. But what you first started talking about is absolutely true. The idea, and I've had a number of people that believe this and were surprised that I didn't believe that Eddie was going to be resurrected as a woman. They just assumed that I thought she was going to be resurrected as a man. And when they find out that's not the case, they're surprised. To me, having Eddie resurrected as anyone other than Eddie is a very unpleasant thought. And it doesn't feel right to me. On the other hand, I also know that whatever happens is probably going to feel right at that time. I'm trying to see eternity from infinity from a finite perspective. And I realize that. I'm doing the best I can. That's what we all do. And so I don't let myself worry about it too much. And I don't think about it because, frankly, that prospect is very unpleasant. And again, it doesn't feel right to me. I don't expect that to happen. So,
Kiko, do you have any thoughts about that? We haven't heard from you yet.
No, I'm too shy, but when she come out as a gay, you know, it was shocking for me. And but her friend, she said, you know, this comes out, oh, I'm a gay, and she's the friend says, Eddie's a Eddie, and that really struck me. Oh, it is. It's nothing to do with boy or girl. Eddie is my child. So I think God sees the same way. I don't have this.
Perfect. No, that is perfect. We have a friend in my ward who had a child with Down syndrome, mm-hmm. and they had the child, Lily. She said, first I had Lily, and then I found out the diagnosis, and then I had Lily with Down syndrome, and everything came crashing down, and I was dealing with it and reaching out to people for a couple of weeks, or days, I don't remember how long she said. And then she got past that, and she said, oh, I just have Lily again, and that's who it is. And, you know, that's what her body has, but it's still just Lily. And if we look at issues like this in the same way, then it makes it much... Again, every situation is different, but it could become more palatable, or it could just become more normalized, or it's something that we can talk about now.
There's so many things that we seem increasingly to say, which I think is a very healthy attitude. We leave this to the Lord. We put this in God's hands. We don't know what's going to happen over there. There are a lot of things that are really messy here in mortality. And nobody has the wisdom or even the revelation to unwind or unthread them. So it's a very healthy attitude, I think we have.
Yeah, go ahead.
I do have a quick question about support. You seem like wonderful resources, but of people who work through some of this, is there a support, is any kind of support entity in support specifically of transgender experience for people who work
within the church?
There's a group that I belong to called North Star, and maybe you're familiar with them. And we found out about North Star back when we thought that Eddie was Eddie thought that she was a gay guy, and that's when we found out about North Star. And we got involved with it. Then we realized Eddie let us know that she was transgender. She was a woman trapped in a man's body, which is why she'd been confused. And they had nothing for that. And Ty Mansfield, who's very much involved in North Star, I went to him and I told him, you know, I'm participating in these groups that are for gender attraction. We don't have anything. And Ty, who is a great guy, if any of you know him, he worked on this, and eventually they created, with a number of other people that are in similar situation, they created a group. It's a Google group, and they were part of a North Star conference earlier this year, and we're starting to grow in numbers. The Google group has been around for about 4 or 5 years now.
It's affiliated with North Star.
It's a North Star transgender group.
Do you know the numbers? How many people?
I don't. Well, I mean, I just kind of blog with these guys, so I mean, okay. The ones that are posting, there's got to be at least 25. I would imagine there are more lurkers that are that are just reading. But this has been fantastic for me. We talk about support. And as I was first trying to understand, you know, I was trying to understand, most of the members are people like Eddie that are actually experiencing themselves. Then there are some parents and some spouses that are on there. But to help me understand, and there was one of the things that I just to give you an example of the way it helped me to understand. And just take the mic away from me when you need to say something. But I was struggling with pronouns. Pronouns are a real problem when you have a friend that's transgender and you find out. I mean, I had thought of Eddie as a male for, you know, 19 years. And now all of a sudden I had to switch pronouns. And I didn't think it was a big deal until I was on this group and one of the members there posted how much it hurt them when someone used the wrong pronoun, which I had never thought about. And after I read that, I immediately tried really hard to get the pronouns right. And now I have the pronouns right with Eddie, but I messed up with everyone else in the world. So, but things like that, that kind of support I think is really important. The church hasn't organized anything. Well, you know, you talk about the church. The church is just an organization. It doesn't think and do things. It's the members that do it. So the leaders of the church have not formally done anything, but members of the church have tried to create support groups, and that's the way I think it should be done.
Also, I'm a co-author with Dr. Caitlin Ryan of a guide for LGBT families dealing with those issues published by San Francisco State University. And there's a big support group around the work that's being done at the Family Acceptance Project in San Francisco State.
And 2 days ago, we showed her film, Families Are Forever, about a homosexual young man. Same thing. Did you just do a podcast with Natasha Helfer-Parker?
Yes.
And the new mental health organization, are they doing anything? I haven't. She posted it like this morning, so I haven't listened to it yet.
I haven't listened to it yet either.
Okay.
I listened to it. It's good.
What do we know about the new Mormon Mental Health Association? Is that the name?
Oh, I don't know about that, actually. I just listened to their podcast.
Torben, do you want to, or go ahead, Eddie, you're going to say something?
Well, when we were in the podcast, she did kind of explain that they are trying to create the Mormon Mental Health Association to be a support as well as a place where you can go to get more sort of knowledge and hear from people like my family and sort of what we've done to support each other and to deal with any issues that arise.
I was going to ask you about just Kendall Wilcox and Far Between. Your job is a filmmaker, not a community builder, but is there anything else that we can do with the film as a community or any kind of support structures?
Yeah, definitely. I think anytime you host a screening, and you're welcome to use the film whenever you want, just let me know that you're using it. So
it's on Vimeo.
So I know and can support you in sharing it and telling people about it. Yeah, it's on Vimeo. It's very easy to find. If you just Google Transmormon, it will pop up right away. Yeah, and sharing it with friends and family, and you know,
You like knowing when we're doing it as a group.
Just for my own curiosity, not for like copyright issues or anything like that. I just like to know so I can kind of see the landscape. But yeah, as, you know, I think just simply sharing it with people, you know, it's interesting. Like, on one hand, I've been really overwhelmed and excited by all of the views that the movie has got. But on the other hand, the things that have been the most meaningful to me personally have been much smaller things. You know, there's been like messages that people have sent me, or I've seen, you know, forums where people are talking about it and see that it's opening up dialogue, and I think that alone is worth it. But I'd say, yeah, sharing it, hosting screenings. If you host a screening locally, I'd be happy to come and extend the invite to the Haywards, of course, too. So.
So my wife was raised in a strong Presbyterian family, and her parents are still very active in that church. And recently, a few years ago, her dad came out as transgender. And on the one hand, she doesn't have any issues with equality, you know, campaigns and all that. But on the other hand, she really struggles because her dad, she says his personality has completely changed into a different person. So the guy that she knew as her dad is kind of no longer there. So have you guys noticed changes in her personality as time went on?
Or you yourself, Abby?
I can go after.
I actually haven't. Eddie's always been Eddie. And it's interesting because I hadn't thought about that. That would be really difficult for a child who suddenly feels like they've lost a parent. They have another parent, but it's not the one they grew up with. But with us, Eddie kind of laughs because I've said a couple of times, to me, I feel like I had this cute little boy that grew into a beautiful woman. And I feel perfectly comfortable with that. And that might seem odd to other people, but it doesn't to me. And so to me, I've seen no difference other than Eddie wears skirts now. And other than that, and her hair is longer. Other than that, I don't see any difference.
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, yeah, Eddie was, when he was, you know, little, still play, like, you know, instead of Power Ranger type of plays, he always wants to play with the girls and also play with, you know, doing the tea party type of thing. So he never, and also I had a dream when she was 10 years old, I had a dream with her with the longer hair. And I was thinking, it was like a twin. Like, I had a boy, and then I had a girl, and then it was exactly the same. And then I was concerned about her in a dream and say, are you okay? And I was talking to her. And then, so she got long hair now.
I would say, maybe I haven't changed very much, but I do feel like, you know, parts of me that I tried to sort of downplay before have kind of come up more. Maybe I just didn't do a very good job of downplaying some parts of me. But and I think my parents have talked about this before. They sort of experienced like the death of a child, but then sort of like a new child coming into the family. And so I feel a little bit responsible for you know, the difficulties, and I'm sure that, you know, her father / mother, you know, feels a lot of that as well. But, you know, I say take it for the good that it's going to do. And I mean, yes, you are losing something, but at the same time, you're gaining someone, and you're going to become closer with them if you accept them and learn more about them than you'd ever known before.
Because they're more authentic now.
Right.
Exactly, yeah.
Were you going to say something? Sorry.
Maybe. I think maybe she might have to see it. He was doing the best, trying to be the best father to her. That's deep love, which he was trying the best, and I think she had to focus on that part. Maybe.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that might help her to understand, and one of the things that, if Eddie's changed, Cake and I have changed just as much. That's something I think about, because this has been a changing experience for us for the better. And but one of the things that she might think about is when Eddie was trying so hard to be the person that he thought he was for all of those years, one of the problems that it caused, and we talk about this in our interview with Natasha, one of the problems that it caused was that when I patted my little boy on the head and said, I love you, I'm so proud of you, son, it meant nothing to her. Because I was loving and complimenting someone that she knew she wasn't. And so I sat there doing those kinds of things, thinking what a good father I was, bonding and building up, you know, self-confidence in my son, and in reality, I was pouring salt on a wound. And now I can finally say to her, I'm proud of you, and you are a wonderful daughter, and now it means something. And that's something that it might be good for your wife to understand.
Do you guys see the church ever changing their position on gay marriage in the future?
Well, you're asking just for an opinion of somebody that, yeah.
You've been involved with, so.
Yeah, my feeling is, and again, the church doesn't really have an opinion, but the leaders of the church do. And I don't know if they will ever come out and change the doctrine that they've got right now. I'm completely open-minded to it. And so it just depends. I don't know that it'll happen, but if it did, I would welcome it. And if it doesn't happen, I'm not going to have a problem with it. I figure the Lord will fix everything that needs to be fixed later. And, you know, we watched, I mean, there, for so many years, the blacks couldn't hold the priesthood. I grew up around Chicago and had a lot of African-American friends, and that was a very awkward subject for me to talk about. And that changed. And I think it didn't change because the brethren finally got a clue. It changed because it was time. So if there are other changes to come, they'll come when the time is right. And for me, I have a strong belief in the leaders of the church. I know they're not perfect, but I know they're a lot more they're a lot closer than I am, and I will follow them. But I don't really have an opinion as to whether or not that's going to happen in our lifetime or even in anyone's lifetime. I don't, Eddie, do you have a comment about that, or Jake, do you?
Or Eddie, just what you see for your future, anything?
Well, I'm not as concerned anymore. I feel like I used to see this gap between what society sees as appropriate. For instance, African Americans should be able to hold the priesthood. And then this delay in what the church was doing. And I saw that's a real negative thing, and I thought, why is it that the church is behind when they should be the forefront of acceptance? And a thought came to me. This is giving an opportunity to the individual members to learn how to love and accept and be open without someone telling them they need to be. And so will the church change on things? I don't care. That's not my job. My job is to just love and to be a good person. And if I feel like something's getting in the way of that, then I'm gonna get that part out of my life. And so that's where my focus is. And I think that other people should try to be a little less you know, like looking at all these little rules and trying to make sure that every single little rule, you know, I'm only going to take 10 steps on Sunday because that's what this little rule here is. Like, why stress out about these little things that have nothing to do with being a loving, good person? That's my thought.
I'd like to thank you guys for coming. This is our applause, because we're out of time as well. But thanks for sharing the film with us, and for you guys sharing your thoughts about it.